Hi, everyone. I'm Brené Brown, and I'd love to tell you about my podcast, Dare to Lead. Innovation, creativity, building a better, more just world, all of these things require absolutely courageous leadership, especially given the complexity and chaos of the world right now. The Dare to Lead podcast is a collection of conversations with change catalysts, culture shifters, some troublemakers, folks who are really daring to create and change the world. I hope you join us.
Going on a trip in a couple weeks.
Where are you going?
Lovely, beautiful South Dakota.
What's there?
All sorts of things. They have the heads on the mountain.
Rushmore is there.
They're always moving that.
I'm never sure where it is.
Yeah, it's in South Dakota now.
It's on DVD and Blu-ray too.
They've got the Native American guy in the mountain. I forget what his name is.
Wow.
I think
Iron Eyes Cody.
And that's pretty much it. Worth noting that I will be seeing none of this stuff. Sole Moon Frye is also there. I won't be seeing any of this stuff because I'll just be in a small town called Tyndall that I've never heard of, where my girlfriend's 90-year-old grandma lives for 5 days.
Man, I feel a Woody Allen movie coming on.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what. Fish out of water. That there is a Jewish person. No, I'm sure they're very nice.
What Woody Allen movie was that a spoof of?
That every was a bananas.
Of them. Hate Speech sure Show.
Spoof of That There's a Jewish Person, his seminal 87 classic.
I'm sure they're very nice. And, you know, her granddaughter's Jewish, so that's probably a sign that they don't mind him. I'm looking forward to it, if only because it's nice to get out of the city. But I also am terrified of rural areas. Like, if there's no lights outside.
What's this place called again?
Called Tyndall. It's called South Dakota.
South Dakota. Do you know... So, you know how there's two different Dakotas? There's, like, the good Dakota and the evil Dakota?
Yeah.
Right?
He's going to...
The good one.
Fanning.
He's right. South is the one where everything happens.
And then now Dakota Fanning is the bad one.
Now boarding last train to Dakota Fanning.
My name is Justin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Griffin McElroy, and I know the best thing of the week.
My name is Christopher Plant, and I know the best thing of the week. That was good. I wish you did that every time.
Better.
I'll slow it down next time.
Okay.
Justin, you want to, like, do the show? Or?
are you Googling more South Dakota facts? I bet you are.
Let me tell you guys about the official website of Tyndall, South Dakota, which does, to answer your question, prominently feature Comic Sans.
I have not. You've done more research on this trip than I have at this
point. You've got to be ready. What if you went there and missed Tyndall Community on the Rise, a big sign outside the town? Imagine.
Wait, are they promoting the sign on the website?
Yeah, the first picture was the sign. Oh, make sure not to miss this sign.
Tyndall just got Dippin' Dots, and they're so psyched about it, and I feel bad because it's like that's not a thing that exists outside of the Dakotas.
This serious town has question. Everything. Look at these pictures. They got a railroad. They got a water tower. They have a sign for Jim Mars Pepsi.
This is important, guys. Do you know of any 3DS or Vita games coming out in the next 2 weeks? I might die.
This is the Besties, where we talk about the latest and greatest in art, opera, history, fashion, social studies, geography, algebra.
It's a school. It's what
it's an hour long podcast school. But today we're going to dip into the world of video games.
I actually have. Can I start? Because I actually have a game for you to play, Russ.
Oh my God! Great.
There's actually a few. There have been some pretty high prof releases lately with Dragon's Crown and Mario and Luigi Dream Team.
Dragon's Crown business.
Yeah. But there's a game that you probably haven't heard of because it hasn't been marketed at all, and it's delightful, and it's on the 3DS eShop, and normally you can't say those two things together about the same thing. And it's called SteamWorld Dig. Do you guys know anything about this game?
I know Steam, and I know Dig.
And the world is, like, the where we live as a race. Okay,
but is it like, is it the dig on Steam? Like released on Steam?
Yeah, it's just people like talking shit about digital distribution platforms.
No, I meant the LucasArts adventure game, The Dig.
I was bored with this line of dialogue like two lines ago.
Tell me about this game that you have.
It's a 3DS eShop game. It was made by I believe a company from Gothenburg called Image and Form. Gothenburg.
What is Gothenburg?
It's blowing up right now.
I don't know what
it's
that is.
It's a city in
Sweden.
Like
Gotham.
Can I I'm sorry. Just give me like a minute.
I'm getting a little ADD. I'm sorry.
God, it's crazy.
I'm Batman.
That's where Ghost is. The guys are making the new Need for Speed. There's some other companies up there. Anyway, SteamWorld Dig. It's an eShop game that basically takes every genre that's like becoming popular in games right now and mashes them all into one super game. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly, it works really well. So you play this robot who has inherited his uncle's mine in this sort of desolate Western town, also populated by robots.
Can I stop you right there?
You fucking can't, Russ, because you're going to say something that's like...
I'm not. This is a genuine question.
Rango? Is it like this Rango
is, no,
robots?
That had nothing to do with it.
Okay.
How does a robot have an uncle? Did the uncle make the robot?
So anyway, in this game, you're a robot miner, and it is one. It's sort of one part Spelunky.
Okay, I'm sold.
One part Minecraft, one part Metroidvania. So you have this city where like you do all your business, you can buy upgrades, you level up, you sell the ore that you find in the mines, and then you go into the mines, and the mines are separated into these like separate overworlds with doors into other dungeons sort of hidden in them. So the whole game is you dig downward in sort of Minecrafty style, where like blocks take a certain number of hits to get through, and you can see like where the ore deposits and gems are. So you have to kind of dig your way over to them, but you have to be kind of strategic because obviously you can't dig upward. It's a 2D game.
Why can't you dig upward?
Well, I mean, because just gravity and like physics and I mean, you can dig upward, but you can't like keep going in that direction because you can't fly. So you go through these excursions where you go down into the mines, you find stuff, you bring it back to the surface, you get money to buy upgrades, you can upgrade your pickaxe so you can dig through stuff faster. But hidden throughout these dungeons are these Metroidvania style upgrades, like you get a drill so you can drill through solid rocks, and you find like a steam boosted jump that lets you get some more upward mobility. And the mining that you do is like persistent. So part of the game is sort of maximizing how efficiently you can get stuff from the mines and then bring it back to the surface to sell and buy new upgrades. So you can just like dig one pit that just goes like straight down, and that can be like your entry point into the deepest parts of the mine. And then you can like buy these teleporters to get back up to the top, or you can, just hoof it to get up there. But
is it randomly generated like Spelunky?
Not every time you go in, but the mine is randomly generated between each game. So like my mine and your mine aren't going to look anything alike.
Oh, interesting.
But it has some of the same sort of Spelunky rules where like if you fall too far, like you'll die. You have a torch basically that lasts a certain amount of time, and you have to keep finding things to keep your fuel going, or else things will go dark, and then you're basically like fucked. You're gonna get trapped in the mine. But it has this really rewarding and addicting hook of finding upgrades to let you go deeper into the mine, buying upgrades, finding treasures, finding these little mini dungeons that are hidden all throughout the mines. And I don't know, it's just a really satisfying exploratory game. It's only $8 on the eShop.
I like this art style.
Yeah, it's got sort of a steampunky art style.
It's kind of like, what was that game? Stranger, Oddworld, Stranger's Wrath?
Yeah.
Kind of like that.
Kind of, a little bit, yeah.
But 2D.
It's great, and like, I don't know, I feel like eShop success stories, like we've talked at length about Nintendo's how they support indie games on their platforms. And I feel like Wii U does a little bit better job than the eShop does. But, like, it's crazy that, like, the developers have said that the game has been a success and that they're going to release more games, even though they've been releasing iOS games for a while, and none of those were as successful as this eShop game, which is, like, fucking bonkers to me.
Yeah.
But it's exactly the kind of game that works on handheld systems. And
Brushstick and I were just talking about that. Maybe just something to step on for a second. Let's step on it. But what happened to iOS in the last year? It seems like so much talent has bled over into either PC with Steam or even like 3DS Marketplace, where those type of games make money.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's like free to play actually ended up doing damage to iOS that I really thought it wouldn't.
That's that race to the bottom. I think it's hard to make money on iOS. I think it's a huge gamble. Like, you either have a hit or, you know, you wasted a lot of time.
I think it's not that there's a lack of success. It's just that it's not spread around very much. Because you have games like, you know, Candy Crush, which make a fucking bajillion dollars.
And are bad. I mean, are bad game. I mean, they're.
The
design of that game is criminal. I mean, it's not just like simple. It's
exploitative.
It's really. My wife swore a blood oath against the people who made the game. Like, it's a really terrible sort of system they've laid.
How many people have come into the hospital with like bad Candy Crush issues? They've been crushed by candy.
Oh, it's a serious problem, and I'm tired of us just joking about it all the time.
I think that it's like the opposite situation. Like they couldn't be more dissimilar, the eShop and the App Store, because like there is such a hunger
for releases.
Not just I mean definitely more I would say on Vita than on 3DS, but when there is a good game on eShop, like I feel compelled to buy it just because like it's been a while since I've played anything on this device for a while.
For sure. You know, this digging game reminds me of a story.
Okay.
There's a man in a hole, and he's stuck in this hole, and a priest walks by.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the priest throws a Bible into the hole, and the guy's like, what am I supposed to do with this? He's like, read, and God will let you out of the hole.
Yeah.
Then a banker walks by and throws some money down the hole, and he's like, what am I supposed to do with this? And the guy's like,
it turns out it was a wada.
You could buy your way out of the hole. And then his friend walks by and jumps in the hole, and the guy's like, why'd you jump in this hole? And the friend's like, well, I've been down here before, and I know the way out.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about that entire story is there were no footsteps in the sand.
Think about it.
Also, a month later, they both die. They both died in the hole because they were trapped in the fucking hole. Like, they tried to climb up each other, but the hole was way too deep.
Guess what?
3 years later, they both went on a date with the same girl, and the next day she went to their apartment, and there was just an old woman there, and the girl was like, but they left their varsity jackets, and she's like, they died in the hole 30 years ago.
Fucking crazy.
Just really chew on it.
God, Russ, I'm glad you brought that story, because it was, like, germane, and it had, like, important messages that
wasn't it appropriate?
Influence me for the rest of my life.
And those two
people?
About
a game? I want to tell you about a game.
Where Josh Lyman and Leo McGarry.
Game I played.
So, is it an actual game and not an anecdote from West Wing?
So, on this one time, so Josh is walking down the hall, and he's like, Bobbity Boop Boop, the president! I didn't watch West Wing. Josh is a character, right?
You asshole. Go
here are two
West
things
Wing.
I don't care about, West Wing and Mass Effect. Goodbye, followers.
I started a Facebook group to make Griffin watch West Wing. That's what it did.
It worked.
I'll do the same thing to you, plant.
I'll do it. Gosh.
It's on Netflix now. You have no excuse. Go on.
Okay, we're going to talk about the most broken, awful piece of shit that I want to keep playing forever and ever, and I just hope they repair it so I can love it with all my heart. And that game is called Payday 2, or the game that made Justin get mad and not play with me anymore.
Oh, my God, this game.
Okay, so the game, when it works, is excellent. And if you don't know anything about Payday, which is totally possible, is the original was a four-player cooperative heist game. It was okay. And it had a kind of a Left 4 Dead vibe where, you know, you'd start a heist and then all these cops would come at you and you'd have to kill hundreds of cops. Mm. Okay. So fast forward to Payday 2.
Fast forward to their funerals.
Yeah. to the Irish funeral and then barfing in the gutter.
Racist. So, Jesus Christ.
That's not racist. It's The Wire. Guys, I watch television, so I know how the police work.
Just not all,
not the good television, though.
Right.
Okay. Wow. So, Payday 2, they brought on some development talent from the Battlefield folks, and they made a game that, sure, like, you can still shoot cops, which, yeah, I guess that's fun, but the game is like a true heist game when it works well. You have four different kind of classes that all have these special abilities, and you have the ability to rob banks, and it feels like you're robbing a bank. Like, you can scream at civilians and make them get on the ground and then tie them up. Some people can use radio jammers to make cell phones not work or police pagers not work.
Wasn't this all in the first game?
So it all actually works now. And it all feels realistic. Another addition is, like, when you break into a big safe, you put the cash into bags, and then you have to kind of move the bags because they have weight.
That wasn't in the last game?
I don't believe it was. I believe you just picked up the bag.
It sounds like you didn't do any research.
Here's the thing. Die. it's really, really crazy when you are in something, you're playing a game, and it feels so much like what you imagine a real heist to be. And that you can play a first-person shooter and not have it be violent. And the other crazy thing about this is there are only so many levels, but how those levels are organized is procedurally generated. And when I say that, I mean, like, the doors inside of the bank will be in different places, or where the vault is may be different.
Oh,
or
really?
how many doors you have to bust through to get to the vault is unique. There's all these things that change. Where the cameras are, how quickly the police respond to an alarm, where alarms are, all of it is...
In one scene, is the bank, like, then an ice cream parlor?
Yeah, and then there's the time when you go into the bank and it's an ice cream parlor, and you're just like, well, this is a surprise! Get it out before it melts!
And they're like, why'd they pay me $20,000 to steal all this ice cream? They could just bought ice cream.
I'm hungry!
It's Cold Stone.
I'm trying to snack over here!
Okay, the plan is to melt it, and then we'll refreeze it.
Listen to me. This place has the fucking country's best yogurt. It's in the name.
Country's best.
It is neat.
Justin, you can talk about what happened with you.
It's just none of it works. I mean, you said it works now, but it doesn't work.
It does work. It's really hard to learn, and you need experienced people.
Okay, point of order. When we try to do a smash and grab mission with three human beings,
okay, yes,
and
this
one
is true.
AI bot, you can't do it because it's, by smash and grab, what they mean is you run in, you smash some stuff, you steal some jewelry, and you leave, and you do it before the cops can show up.
Okay.
We all did that, and that's good. And then the AI bot's like, hold on, wait a second, I gotta find that Sanyo I was looking for. And he just collapses as the cops come. Like, you cannot do it with the AI.
So he stands there, or?
Well, originally they weren't going to have AI, and the community was like, no, you have to have AI.
I've played a bit, and I can say the good news is they don't have AI.
Yeah.
They have husks. That's
what?
It. They have husks. They have virtual... standing corpses.
They have simulacra. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's more like Left 4 Dead than we thought.
Yeah. So I can get past that to some degree. That it was.
Can
just
you play without AI people? If you wanted, if you just had two people online,
and there are videos of people completing incredibly complex missions with one person, but that is like, that's a novelty. Like, you're playing it to push the limits of what the game is meant to be.
Can you throw bags to one another, like, and create like a water moving chain?
Absolutely.
Not with the AI, but you can do it with humans.
Okay,
the AI
that's
will
cool.
look at you like you are a moron.
You threw the money. We gotta take it. You dropped Chris. Chris,
my
come back. You dropped the money.
When one AI goes down in the middle of like a crowded street, and then like the other two AI go running for it.
Can you like finish the mission if one guy dies?
Yes, you can.
And don't you get more money that way?
No, it just all gets dispersed.
What is evenly. How real bank robberies work?
Well, what is crazy? Loyal. What is crazy to me about this game is that it is like, I think you're understating the learning curve. It's fucking impenetrable because playing by yourself to get good is not an option because it's not even close to what playing with other people is like because the AI is just fucking miserable on both ends. Like, you and your three guys will like all aim shotguns at the front door of a building and cops will be like, oh, a door, cool. Let me just get right in this door and oh, nope, fuck.
Yeah, but don't they go in different doors and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes they'll spawn out of, like, a fucking cop will come out of the freezer. Like, what were you doing in there, dog? But not only that, what's crazy is that you have this safe house that has all of these elements that are supposed to be, like, tutorials that don't fucking, like, are not practically useful at all. Like, they may teach you, you can put drills on safes, which, by the way, is, like, the least fun element of any game ever. It's basically, here's a 2-minute timer that's going to keep stopping, so you have to kind of babysit it. And
I thought that that added kind of a cool tension to it.
Yeah, there's a lot of these elements are good, and it is impenetrable without help, but having played a lot of the beta too, I was surprised how eager the community was to teach new players how to play. I think that because it is so difficult, I think a lot of the players, especially high-level players, take pride in helping like somebody who's a level zero complete, you know, a really difficult mission on the highest, you know, difficulty level. And because if they do, it gives that person so much experience and money, and it also feels like a crazy accomplishment, because even the crappiest player is better than the AI.
Whereas I feel like in League of Legends, if you go in there and you're a newbie,
you're punished.
People will yell at you and call you names and you'll cry and go home and take like a long shower because you're so sad about it.
Yeah. Okay. So none of this gets to the point of why I actually have an issue with the game. Cause I can get past
none of the 10 real, things that they
the
mentioned.
The real issue of all of this is you get to a point where it all works very well. But when I was playing it, it would, boot out of the game at the very last second and take my loot. And you get one special piece of loot that's randomly chosen per like completed mission, which sometimes can take a while if you do a very long one. And even with like, there was one bug that they recognized, you know, while we were reviewing it, but even with that kind of taken care of, I was still having issues. And that is the worst. I mean,
that's when I actually quit.
That's when we lost Justin.
Had done this mission that literally, I mean, no exaggeration, it was a multi-day mission, and no exaggeration, took, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes, and at the end of it, my game crashed to the desktop, and I lost any reward I would have gotten from actually doing it, and I was like, well, I'm never playing this again, so...
Yeah.
Until that point, I actually didn't even mind being new because I thought it was kind of fun to have Plant tell us what we should be doing and then decide to not do that.
Oh, that was a blast.
Just really let the bodies hit the floor. I mean, really get out there and strut my stuff.
I feel like Plant would not make for the best leader in that scenario.
He kept his cool.
My cool despite you saying, okay, let's make it loud. 5 seconds.
I said that.
When shit does get rough, I feel like any disappointment you might feel is totally ameliorated by the fact that the waves of police are timed to musical cues, which is the fucking raddest thing. Like, you'll hear the music like start to pick up and then just like fucking go crazy. And right when it goes crazy is when the waves of police start coming. It gets you genuinely hyphy. But for me, the shooting just kind of seems so-so and not as clever as like... I've played maybe 10 missions, and I've only completed a few of those, and like none of them went smooth. Like, every single one devolved into me shooting dozens and dozens and dozens of police officers.
Oh, out of the game, right? Isn't it like, what was that heist game on XBOA? Monaco?
Monaco.
Where it's like, sort of, like, designed for that.
No. I disagree. Well, because in Monaco, you have this set of tools that is constant. Like, the things that you can do is constant, whether you're sneaking. Yeah. And then, like, if you get caught, you have to use those tools to, like, get away and survive. In Payday, you're explicitly not using those tools when you are, or you're using a different set of tools when you're heisting, yeah, and you're trying not to get caught. And then when shit go loud, it's like fucking shoot. You gotta kill everybody in the entire world. And like, I don't know. It felt like a shooter with a heist component sort of attached to it. When like, I would much rather have a game that is the reverse.
See, I felt like it was the opposite. Like, the best parts were designed to be the heist, and that's why I think the shooting feels a little weak. But the most exciting mission for me, of the like shooting missions, because there are definitely missions where you're just busted, is one that's like a ripoff of Breaking Bad. The, you know, like in Breaking Bad, this is no spoiler because it happens so many times, but where a van would get pulled over and the police would open the back and then guns would go blazing from inside the van and outside the van.
No.
Okay, well, it happens. Okay. But there's a mission where you get pulled over by the FBI, basically, and they unload, and you have to get out of a van and start moving your coke up into a warehouse.
Yeah.
And working with four people and basically having each of your backs facing away from each other and like covering all points while you're totally out in the open, and then also moving these bags of coke at the same time with that crazy music cue that he's talking about was incredibly exciting. And it felt more tense than like a traditional first person shooter co-op mission, which is keep going forward and then wait behind cover.
Is there ever a moment where you do the bank heist and then like someone hits the silent alarm, and then there's like time at which you've taken hostages and then can like interact with the cops in not a way that's like them storming the gates?
No, but
like, can you like ask for them for things?
No, but the police are careful around hostages, so it benefits you to basically get some in front of your shop, and they will focus on breaking them loose. And if you get arrested, your time to basically get negotiated back into play is reduced if you have hostages. So you'll basically exchange.
Is one of the missions breaking into a record or a radio station to get your demo played?
With guns filled with hot sauce.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Is that Airheads? Was that the movie Airheads?
That is the movie Airheads.
Okay, I was trying to make sure.
It's Biodome.
Okay.
Is there a mission where you and one of the lesser popular Baldwin brothers infiltrate like this scientific facility where they're trying to like recreate these different environmental biomes, but like then you throw like a crazy party and the scientific and experiment safety is kind of ruined.
Is this in the Army Now? You're describing in the Army Now.
And then, no, it's Chairman of the Board. And then and somehow you fix it and the science comes out legit, even though there's this huge outlier where you threw a fucking party and people like peed in the tar pits.
What was the name of that series? Was it Greasy Weasel?
It was Pauly Shore's War on Science.
Okay, got it. And Us. And
hey, guys, I think it's halftime.
It feels like halftime.
Oh, boy.
Can I say a thank you at the beginning of halftime?
Yeah.
When I was walking back from, I had to pick up my stuff from the office the other night, and I was like walking home, and I was on my phone, and I don't know who this person was, but I hope they hear this podcast. The person pointed at me and yelled, "I love you," in a very passionate way. And I was shocked because I was on the phone. And then he said, "Besties." And I was like, "Thank you for listening." And then he sped off.
Is it possible that he's a psychopath and that he doesn't listen to our podcast? And he was saying that you and he are, in fact, best friends.
I wouldn't have minded that either. Yeah. You know, if he had nothing to do with me, he had never heard anything that I've ever done. But he just, you know, he loved me.
Yeah.
And then they wanted you to be best friends.
Yeah.
Guys, we're famous.
That's true. I guess that's true.
Fresh Tick, you got recognized at the movies, right?
At the movie theater. I was off to see Elysium, which was terrible. But the gentleman...
Disappointment. I want to hear about that after this.
Okay, we can talk about it. But we won't go into spoilers, but I'll talk. And the guy who sold me the Diet Coke was like, I know you. And then we talked about video games briefly.
When you ordered your beverage, you were like, and I want a Diet Coke.
I did, actually. Okay. I actually order everything like that now.
Just hoping someone will recognize you from your...
Yeah, Elysium, not to go into spoilers, but essentially it... You know, there are moments where it's very pretty. There's a lot of pretty things to look at. But it
like
turns
Jodie
out...
Like Foster.
It turns out that Noah Blomkamp can actually write dialogue because he's
did
bad
he
at it.
Did he write District 9?
So, funny story, he wrote the story for District 9, but almost all of the dialogue in District 9 was improvised by Shartlow Copley, whatever his name is, the lead guy. It was almost all improvised, which sort of became very clear that this was obviously not improvised, because there's lines where, like, Matt Damon is, like, being spoken to by a little girl, and she's like, I'm going to tell you an allegorical story about a hippo and a meerkat that will be important later on in the movie. Shouldn't really say that exactly, but it's pretty heavy-handed, and I was pretty bored, and it's a big bummer. And I feel like this summer, apart from Pacific Rim, which I really liked, has been full of those pretty big bummers. Yeah,
I liked Blue Jasmine, but it was sad.
Oh, I sort of liked it. Yeah, that was pretty much my movie adventure.
That's a great story.
You asked me to tell it.
No, I mean, I appreciate it. I meant it. I wasn't being insincere. I'd like to talk about my game that I played. Speaking of things that are sort of sad. I did the review of Papers, Please. Papers, Please.
Mm. I don't think that's how they say it.
Usually that's how
Papers,
they say
Please.
It. Papers, Please is a document checking
It's a document game.
It's a document game, basically, where you play the guard at this fictional. You're a border agent in this fictional company called Ostrotska, which I'm probably mispronouncing, but I don't care because it's not real. It's obviously like sort of stand-in for the USSR in the early to mid '80s. And basically, the flow of the game is that people come to your checkpoint after waiting for a very long time, and you see them at your window, and they pass over their documents, and you review them for inaccuracies and to see if they have falsified something or make sure they have everything and make sure they're up to code. The rules change every day, so it's broken up into days. Your first day, you walk in. You look at...
Is this first person? What is the perspective here?
The perspective is really kind of hard to quantify.
Yeah, so the top half of the screen is basically just a wide view of your gate and the line of people and the guards that are taking care of you. And then it's sort of the top third. And then the bottom two-thirds is on your left-hand side is a window with a picture of the person and a little desk. And then to the right is your actual desk that you can peruse the documents on. Okay. So they throw their documents through the window. You pick them up, you sort of lay them out, and every day you have to check the rules to make sure they haven't changed. Some days,
everything is presented. There's no, the user interface is presented entirely through physical objects. So like whenever you compare a rule to an inconsistency, you have to get out your rule book, flip to the page that has the offended rule on it, and then link that to the inconsistency. It's not
so
like you click the menu
rule,
button.
For example,
Like one day, everyone has to have polio vaccination documentation. So they slide that across. You look at their documentation. You make sure that it's not expired. You make sure that the names match. You make sure of all this. And if you find an inconsistency, then you go into this inspect mode. You click the rule that they're violating and the specific thing in their documentation. And you are given the option to sort of clarify it further. Sometimes you can do a full body scan and see if they are carrying contraband, that sort of thing. Or you can detain them outright, or you can just send them away. And you have this big stamp that you a very authoritative red or green that lets them through the border or not. So that's like sort of the central game mechanic, but what it does that's interesting is when it starts to push on that. So you have a family, and every day you tally up the number of evaluations you got right. So, you know, if you sent the 10 people through that were supposed to go through, and you sent 5 people away that should have gone away, then you get X number of dollars for that. And you mm-hmm. use that money to feed your family and to house them and clothe them and pay for medicine when they're sick and that sort of thing. But if you miss too many, you start getting penalized. So when you hear stories from people who can promise you other things or are trying to give you a sob story, you have to decide if it's worth it, if it's something that you are willing to do. So it's like everything is a test like that to see if it's you know, worthy of taking money out of your family's, you know, coffers, because that's what every missed opportunity
and every day
is.
Every day lasts like 6 minutes, so you have a really tight
timetable. So the timer's going.
You want to try and see as many people as you possibly can. So like, it's not just you can spend all the time you want going over people's papers and then
right.
sending them through or sending them
right.
away.
Like, you're also trying to push as many people through. But to give you an example, a guard visits you and tells you that he's the guy who handles detaining people and that he gets a bonus for every person he detains, and he offers you a kickback if you detain more people. So for every 2 people you detain, you get 5 credits, something like that. So
right.
you suddenly have an impetus to detain someone who doesn't necessarily need to be detained.
Okay.
And it's asking you to weigh those sorts of things. And there are 20 different endings depending on the path you take. And you can go back to any given day after you've completed it and pick up your story again there. I probably saw 6 or 7 of the endings. I'm not sure there's a win scenario per se.
How many of them end with blue jeans? Like you get blue jeans.
None of them.
You sure? You haven't
positive.
Played all of them.
It's a really interesting game. It's very somber, but with sort of a vein of hopefulness. But it really does give you... I talk about this in my review. It turns you into a monster, really. I mean, you are doing some things that are really unethical, all in the service of this government. I mean, people can have a completely legitimate reason for why they don't have these things, these papers that they're supposed to have. Rules change every day. So, you know, people show up and they don't know the rules and they have the wrong documents and you send them away. And it puts you into that mindset of, well, I have to do this. This is my job. And not consider the ethics of it until you take a step back.
So I don't really care for games that make me think and feel bad. Mm. So this doesn't sound like my kind of game. I don't like thinking.
Clearly. But I think that it's not... What I liked about it is it's sort of not... It's not a preachy game, I don't think. I mean, it's not the sort of thing where you discover all along you were supposed to be doing X. It's very much a mirror that shows you... I mean, if you try to be an all-around great guy who's sending everyone through, I mean, you literally won't make it 2 days. You'll lose your money, your family will die, and you will end the game.
No blue jeans.
So you can't, and that means that you have to live in some sort of gray area, and that's a really interesting line to walk.
But even without all that, I think just the core mechanic of going over documents and finding inconsistencies and like it's a memory puzzle game at its best. And like, it's just so rewarding to like somebody hands you 4 slips of paper with, you know, dozens of pieces of information and graphics on them that you have to peruse to make sure it's all up to code. And like, you're just about to stamp it clear to send it back. And you notice like the one inconsistency that they try to sneak by you. And you're like, not today, motherfucker. Like,
do they do
you.
Stuff where it's like the handwriting is like not super clear or
there's stuff like, the weight, you have a scale and a sort of ruler that people stand in front of. So you notice that the weight that they put on their ID and their actual weight doesn't match, that sort of thing.
Maybe they had a big breakfast.
That's when you do a full body scan and you see
see all the poop.
Yeah, no. you do see boobs and wieners though, which is weird. You can turn that off if you want. Mm-hmm. I think that basic mechanic is what makes it work, because you do get that rush, like Griffin said, of like, oh, I got you. But that's also morally pretty
Nah.
Yeah.
Nah, yeah. It just gets you psyched because you're so good at your job.
Yeah.
Right. it's kind of funny. There's some parts that are funny. It's not super.
Sounds like a laugh riot.
There's one old man that tries to come through like every other day, and his shit is like always wrong. And he's like, "Here I come! I made it this time."
I mean, the first day he has nothing. The second day he has a passport that he clearly made himself.
Like, and every time you send him away, he's like, "It's okay. You have a really hard job, and you're doing so great. Bye."
I'm like, oh man, I love that guy.
Aww.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting, and another great example of a game where, I mean, you don't have to kill people to enjoy it.
Well, you're indirectly killing people.
Well, that's, you're not pulling a trigger.
And yep, it's, well, sometimes you can. And it's on Steam.
Right, there are guns. Shit.
It's on Steam, and you can play it on Mac.
Oh my God, fantastic. I like it. Okay.
I would love to see this shit on, it seems almost made for iPad, doesn't it? Like all of its,
does
all of
sound
its,
like it. Yeah.
Is the screen large enough on an iPad for all the paperwork?
I think so.
Yeah. Should be.
Yeah, and you could like dress up in a uniform and pretend that you're like the guy.
Or you could connect it in Bluetooth to your iPhone and then have that be like one of the windows. Wouldn't that be tight?
That'd be tight.
Tech visionary.
Well, that was sort of a downer, but also kind of interesting, which is, offers a nice segue to my game. We were discussing earlier how iOS and mobile games have been sort of a tough space to live in for the last year or so, because they've been inundated by city builders, free-to-play puzzle games like Candy Crush, and like, it's sort of depressing. I remember a couple weeks ago, Justin, you actually asked me for like a twitchy Super Hexagon-esque game, and I didn't really have an answer for you because it had been so long since one of those had come out that I really liked. One has come out that I really like.
The wait is over.
This would be my the best reason why there's still hope for mobile games. And it is Nightmare Tower. It is spelled K-N and then, you know, the rest of it, Nightmare Tower. Like a knight. And essentially you
are... Do they know
are...
that they spelled the name of the game wrong? Have you emailed them to be like, hey, you, okay, there.
I hit them up on Twitter. They seem cool with it, but I don't know.
They're probably just embarrassed.
Yeah, I think probably.
Is it also possible that it is the correct name and it's a mare that also happens to be a knight? Like a young
There's horse. No horses in this game.
Hey, Russ, does this have anything to do with the game Nightmare Creatures?
I don't know that game. Maybe.
Does it have anything to do with Knight Rider?
No, that's spelled
Does it have anything to do with Towerfall or actual towers, like the structures?
Yes, it has to do with the tower.
One time I rode the Tower of Terror at Disney World and I got diarrhea.
One time there was this guy in a hole and the guy was like, give me money. And
Chris
somebody
Plant,
was like, okay,
watch
what?
West Wing before you make any West Wing jokes.
Oh, wait, that's a West
Punk.
Wing story?
I don't think that like physics will let someone run forever. Can we talk about that?
Okay, well, that's good because you're not doing any running in this game. What?
Well, talk about the fucking game so I can keep interrupting you.
Okay. So, you're a knight, and you've got a rocket. And the game starts with
you... You're a rocket knight?
Come on now. I don't like when anybody does it.
The game starts with you launching yourself from the bottom of the tower up using sort of a pinball-y timer mechanic. And so you're zooming your way up this tower. And you're flying straight up, and monsters are appearing below you. And the idea is you are just tapping the screen to dash down, slash a monster, and that bounces you straight up again, and you'll gain more speed every time you kill a monster. And the idea is to keep your momentum up, staying ahead of an oncoming wall of lava, which is rising below you. So what's cool about this is... First of all, it's not a free-to-play game. I think it's $3 for the Universal app. And because why that's a good thing is because a lot of games like this would essentially, you know, free to play the game play to death, which is to say, well, they charge you for upgrades and stuff like that. In this, you're earning money based on how far you go, but also monsters will drop money, and that money you can use to upgrade the damage that you do. So monsters that originally took 3 hits now only take 1. You'll increase your speed, you'll increase these like potions that you can pick up, and you're constantly getting higher and higher up the tower. Eventually, you'll get to the top of the tower where there's a boss. I know a lot of the people on this podcast take issue with games like even Jetpack Joyride, because essentially you sort of have to like sink in a ton of time before you can be really good. In this, that time is really rewarding because you're constantly feeling more and more powerful until you get to this maximum point where you beat the final boss, and then it unlocks a survival mode where you are literally trying to last forever using all the skills that you've unlocked throughout the game. Does that make any sense at all? You guys are very quiet.
I'm just listening because I've played. I got so deeply into this game that
it's tremendous.
I did all the trophies in the regular mode. I did all the trophies in the survival mode. I only stopped playing it because I literally just had nothing.
Yeah.
I had nothing left to do. It was, I would say, deeply engrossing, says Polygon.com.
I love it. I think they did an amazing job, not only with just like the concept of the game, which does feel unique. It sort of feels like a little bit Punch Questy, in the sense that it's a game. It's not like a casual, mindless, like people that play games would enjoy it. But they also have like this art style that's kind of like Mad Magazine-y. It's like very outlandish. And there's just a lot of like enjoyment, like a lot of satisfaction in every moment that you're playing.
It reminds me of it's similar to a game called Christmas Santa Flight. You know this, if you know that game.
I'm not aware of it now.
I play it every holiday season, and I very much enjoy it because there are X number of upgrades, and if the more you play, the more you can earn, and there is a limit. So at the end of it, you are done, and you have unlocked everything. And I find that very gratifying as a gameplay experience. And I know that's pretty rote. I mean, I know that that's not like... that's kind of dopamine 101, but it works for me.
Yeah, I mean, it is very obvious why you're getting, you know, that scaling up, why that's so enjoyable. But I like the fact that even when you've maxed it out and you bought everything, there's still something to do to keep you coming back in that survival mode. It did feel like an inverse of Ridiculous Fishing, because it uses motion control for moving your guy around. But the motion control is like super tight and accurate, and it ends with that survival-y mode in Ridiculous Fishing as well with the Maelstrom. It's just damn good. It is one of the best mobile games, probably my favorite mobile game of the year so far. Wow! And it's also on Ouya, if you've got one of those, and strongly recommend. I would also recommend if you have an iPad. I think it's more enjoyable. I've been playing on both the iPad and the iPhone. I think it's more enjoyable on the iPad because you have a better sense of like space and like accuracy and stuff, but it's good on iPhone too. And that's all I had to say about that.
Who, listen, I'm not going to be on next week's episode because I'm going to be in Germany.
Okay.
So why don't you guys give me this one and I'll just kind of coast on it for the next week. And then when I get back, like, it can be another fair fight.
You know what's good about this podcast?
What's
is
that?
It sort of brings to light a bunch of things that maybe we weren't aware of before. Almost like it's like a day dedicated to like making certain things you thought were unimportant way more important. Like a big block of cheese day.
Okay. I'm going to declare Rust. We are not going to have a winner this week. We're going to have one loser, and it's Rust Rushton.
Are you like just now watching West Wing? Is it? Hey guys, no. I got some really great Married with Children goofs that I want to bounce off you guys.
You went to the same place my head was going.
Weird. That's he flushes. Crazy. It's really funny.
Al Bundy, man.
Flushes that toilet.
So, okay, end it. How about the end of this episode?
Yeah.
End
it. Who won? Did anybody win? I feel like nobody could
I won.
I don't even remember what you brought.
Actually, I think Griffin won just because I'm really worried about him. I'm worried about him getting on that plane and him thinking, like...
Right, like, if I don't get it, like, I'm going to have a hard time getting to sleep on the plane, and then I'm going to get to Germany, I'm going to be grumpy.
Yeah.
Well, good thing that Germany is such a happy place, so...
You've never been, you can't...
I have been.
You've never been in your life.
I went to Leipzig.
His name is Frühstück.
That's true, it means breakfast.
Hi, I'm Russ Breakfast.
thank you so much again for listening to our program. If you want more video game stuff, go to polygon.com or YouTube or something. Just type Polygon and hit return, see where it goes. We're here every Friday to bring you the latest and greatest, so we hope you'll join us again next Friday for the besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best things?